Hello and welcome to Talking Capital. I'm Ian Barnard, CEO of CapGen. Each month, I'm joined by a member of our investment team or a guest from one of the investors in our universe to talk about the investment themes and opportunities that are available today to family investors. What is CapGen? We're a private investment office for families with capital. Our clients are sophisticated, internationally minded investors, and what we do is to help them make the most of their capital and to seek out investment opportunities across any asset class in any region of the world. So in the course of these episodes, you can expect us to cover a globally diversified portfolio of assets and sectors, be that bricks and mortar or derivatives. In summary then, this is a podcast where we discuss the questions that we think are playing on the minds of sophisticated long-term investors. If that sounds up your street, do please subscribe and you'll enjoy a new episode published on the first Thursday of each month. Welcome to Talking Capital and a return after our recent special series to the first in three episodes digging deeper into an investment theme, going back to our standard approach for these things. Over the course of the next three episodes, we will be covering the theme of energy transition and the investment opportunity that it represents. Now, today I'm being joined by Donald McFarlane, who runs our portfolio management team, who's going to talk big picture about the opportunity and how he sees it, how we see it, and what big picture we think the opportunity is. Then in subsequent episodes, I'm going to be joined by my colleague, Mario Quistapace, from our research team. And then subsequently, in the final of the three episodes, by Per Lekander, who is the investment manager actually deploying capital in pursuit of this strategy. So to start, Donald, over to you. I'm going to ask you to zoom out, if I might, and to set out how you think about what this energy transition theme is, very big picture. What are the drivers? Why is it a theme?
Energy transition really is a system change from an economy or economic system based more singularly around fossil fuels to one in which electrification, electricity and renewable energy are key determinants of power. Borrowing a phrase from a research provider that we use at CapGen, GavCal Economics, economic activity is energy transformed. So the investment opportunity here is to align portfolios with a sort of systemic change that is happening in the world in terms of how power is turned into economic growth. For us at CapGen, energy transition is non-linear. This is not just about a rapid transformation from a fossil fuel-based economy to an electric-powered economy, but more broadly about the impact that move in direction has, not just in particular commodity markets or energy markets, but throughout economies, throughout sectors. You know, it's going to impact both utilities as well as technology. From a sort of dollar size of the opportunity, it's quite difficult to quantify. It's very fast moving. We're seeing that really very much as we speak today. And the impact is wide and felt across broad economies. We've seen our position is today is that we're moving into perhaps a second phase of the energy transition opportunity, one focused more in terms of execution on electrification and rising power needs, as well as resilience.
So let me jump in there, Donald, because I think, you know, we chatted a bit beforehand about this, and clearly we've been talking about this subject for months and years now. And if you listen to the previous series, we talked to Dimitri about what's going on with the energy transition. We've always seen this as, yes, it is partly about sustainability and about climate change and mitigating the risk to us of the way hitherto we've been capturing energy. But that's not 100%. It's never been for us 100% of the story. There have always been these two other big headlines, the latter of which is, I think, becoming ever bigger. So you've got sustainability. The two additional ones are just demand, just both the existential and continuing growth in demand for energy, but also increasingly demand that energy be delivered as electricity. And we see that in our daily lives as we, you know, need to make sure that our mobile phones are charged and the ever-growing number of devices, our wearable tech, and perhaps our cars, and. And then the additional one, which has always been there, but I think the Iran war has just made, followed by the Ukraine war, just ever larger, is this need for resilience. It has become very clear to us in the last, four and a bit years since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that we just can't be so wholly dependent on hydrocarbon fuel supplies that come from a long way away that we can't control. And clearly, we're not going to go back to a world where, you know, a lot of the British Empire and British imperial expansion was about making sure we controlled upstream hydrocarbons. So that's very reasonably and rightly all gone. But if you assume that's the case, then that need for resilience takes you down this path to make that transition. I think those are the headings, aren't they, Donald?
Yeah, and absolutely. I think in terms of the electrification element of the theme as well, we're in a second phase of the electrification theme in that, you know, a few years ago, everything was about making transportation and industry more electronically efficient. You know, we've seen that. And there was a period where within the energy transition theme, you know, the question around future demand for electricity was balanced against the fact that we were just getting better at using less power to do more. Exactly as you say, we now seem to be in a phase where post 2022 and post the sort of consumerization of AI and the demand for AI has really gone through a step change or a function change, we now just see that power demand is going to be greater. That's not predicated on a view in terms of expanding CapEx or growth in the AI theme, but just what we've seen to date in terms of levels of investment and levels of usage. Forever, it is likely that we will see a higher demand for power. And then coming to your second point, Ian, exactly around energy transition has impacted different countries differently as reactions to both geopolitical shocks, but also their own energy infrastructure and their existing demand and supply imbalances. Take, for example, in Europe, you know, Europe, as we've mentioned recently on the podcast in for other reasons, is extremely reliant today on external energy. And different parts of Europe are at different phases in their energy transition. You know, we see Germany, which is has a sort of 500 billion euro infrastructure investment announced in terms of increasing their own energy resilience, but also transition away from a reliance on fossil fuels. And see France, where nuclear has been one of the leading alternative energy sources to some of the periphery nations where renewables are much more in focus.
So I think we are saying, Donald, aren't we, that this is very much a long-term trend rather than a short-term opportunity. That's fair, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is a way of aligning portfolios with the structural changes happening to power and energy markets globally, not just in Europe. This is a theme that is happening in different ways and to a different extent around the world. And we seem to now be in a, yes, this is a long-term theme, but this is also an interesting time within the theme to really focus our allocation into the space. If we think about, you know, pre-2022, perhaps, a lot of capital flowed into energy transition as a theme, really driven by ESG-type mandates and a focus on renewables. Rates were low and lots of those projects ended up being unprofitable. Some of that excess supply of capital was shaken out in 2022. Some of the glut was taken away, cleared through that excess. And we now seem to be at a stage in the investment opportunity where there's been a bit more capital discipline mixed with those step function changes in demand that provide, you know, a really interesting opportunity, not just in at sort of power generation level, but in terms of grid resilience, grid improvements, you know, even renewables recovery. So, you know, thinking about the backbone of some of that future power supply in terms of wind and solar, and that is very much a multi-year up cycle. And then feeding through into things like energy transition metals. So aligning the portfolios, not necessarily with some of the underlying volatile commodities, but access to the long-term cyclical opportunities that the mining and drilling suppliers represent.
So long-term trend, is this just something that's about stock picking? Or are there, and I guess it's a bit of a leading question, what are the other bits of the investment, the possible investment universe that you could use to try to put yourself on the right side of this broader theme? Is it just equities?
No, I think it really is a multi-asset, cross-asset theme. As we've mentioned to some extent, what sits behind a lot of the electrification of grids and future industry is a base metal demand. So things like copper in terms of electricity, silver in terms of solar, and then sort of battery type metals in terms of power storage. Infrastructure, you know, infrastructure plays an important part in the delivery and the more utility end of the spectrum here. And yes, that might be through equities, but perhaps with a very different expected sort of risk and return profile. There is a huge amount of capital being raised both in equity markets, but also in debt markets. So one could view this through the lens of fixed income or credit type investments, all the way through to, you know, real assets and real estate exposure and owning data centers or renewable projects, both wind, solar, perhaps water. There really is a true sort of multi-asset investment opportunity. Our focus to date has been on the equity side, and that's what we're really talking about today.
Don, really helpful. Thank you. So let's make our own little transition now from topic one to topic two, or to question two, really, in a way, which is always, okay, how does this fit into client portfolios, conceptually, that is? So we're confident, we've identified a theme, we're pretty clear it's there. I mean, this is not undiscovered, we're not discovering anything. This is you know, lots of people are talking about this. How then do we take the next step, which is to fit it into a client portfolio in a way that allows us to get the maximum, if you like, benefit for clients from what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's the crux of the issue. And for us, the best way to approach this is as a thematic exposure within the sort of focus allocation in our public equity book.
Well, I'm going to pause you there, Don, just say, you mentioned focus. What are the other bits of the equity portfolio that are there?
Yeah, so I think it's a useful heuristic that we use internally is around between a quarter and a third of our public equity exposure will be in some of these focused areas, with the remaining in core allocation, which is your longer term, bigger building blocks. So things like your growth, value, quality, and systematic exposure. So having identified a theme, you know, we have four key themes in the Capgen's portfolio today. Many of which have been on the podcast previously. So that's biotech, emerging markets, Japan, and energy transition. Stepping back very quickly as to why we think that the opportunity set is most attractive on the equity side, it really is, you know, we've mentioned all those different ways to play the energy transition theme, but actually within equities, you can have a broadly diversified exposure to the theme, but with that equity component, which when you have, you know, a structural, or as we believe, we've identified, as you say, alongside many others, a structural tailwind, then being an equity owner is quite an attractive place to be within the theme. We've got to think about sizing of a thematic investment. And part of that is a factor of the breadth and depth of the opportunity set. And here that seems to be, to us, quite wide, you know, for the reasons that we've mentioned about the different sub-strategies, but also the depth of sort of capital markets. Lots of the investments that are focused on the energy transition theme are large, you know, large cap investments. So there's a ability to deploy lots of capital here. And also you've got to think about crossover with other parts of the portfolio. So considering where some of that factor or fundamental exposure from the core allocation in the portfolio generates some crossover with the theme. That to us resonates a lot today, given we have a preference at the moment for more active stock picking in our portfolio. And lots of those active stock pickers have mandates where they are able to invest thematically. And this is a theme that we're seeing popping up across the portfolio in other places as well. So when we're thinking about how much we want to allocate to the dedicated theme, you've got to look in the round and not be sort of myopically focused just on this line item and see the exposure that you're getting more broadly. There's competition for capital everywhere in the portfolio, and we have some targeted exposure to other parts of the market that might be beneficiaries of this theme. And then the nature of the opportunity set, and in this instance, also the type of manager that one selects, leads us into just having one solution within this area of public equity books. So contrast that perhaps with biotech, where we have two different solutions providing that exposure in portfolios. Here, given the broad-based nature of the opportunity set, the sort of expected risk return profile of the underlying holdings, and the strategy of the manager that we've partnered with, all of our thematic exposure is to the to energy transition is just via one external manager.
So just reflecting on that, Donald, and the division of the equity portfolio between focused and core, or perhaps I should say core and then focused, you're saying that the focused element of the portfolio will mean a little bit of doubling up on positions that could well be held in the core area, but that's okay, and that's the point of what we're doing. It's a way of, I guess, making transparent and visible some of the choices we're making.
Exactly, and a key determinant there for us is the sizing of the theme. And there, you know, that also leads us into the path of why perhaps maybe one manager is more suitable than two managers in this theme. It's a broad theme, which there we don't want to have too much diversified exposure almost to the theme, in that we're having two different managers doing two different things alongside, you know, we know that we have existing exposure to some of the underlying theme elsewhere in the portfolio. So having more of a concentrated approach, but still a manager that's able to invest across the broad sub-strategies within the energy transition is an appealing exposure in the portfolio.
Yeah, I think that brings out a broader point, actually, that I'll just pick on for a moment, which is we only put things in portfolios that are additive. So there's no sort of prima facie rule that you have to have, you know, two managers in a certain theme. In fact, if you one should be enough, you would only add a second, indeed a third, if each of those incremental steps was additive, which in the case stepping away from energy transition into biotech, we think is the case, because more talented people really thinking about individual therapies is additive, whereas in the case of the energy transition, our view is it isn't additive. It could also be subtractive.
Exactly. As well as a consideration of the underlying profile of, I suppose, the investment opportunity, but also the manager. And yes, we're hoping here to have, you know, stock selection skill and alpha delivered from our selection of the manager. Perhaps given the nature of the investments and the nature of the theme, that's less likely to be as lumpy as it is in a theme such as biotech, where there are more binary outcomes. And therefore, taking a bit more manager risk here is perhaps a better place to deliver a material outcome for the portfolio versus too much manager risk in something which is higher volatility and bigger wins but bigger losses, see biotech.
Yes, I take this opportunity to make to tease out another, I think, general point, which is that the portfolio construction and management work that you do is, yes, of course, top down. You start with a view of how you want the portfolio to be positioned, and then you go and see what's available there as instruments, and you iterate back upwards once you see what's available. So there's a broad view that we would like to be a part of the energy transition. You then go and see the instruments that are available to get expressions of that. And then the consequences of what's available and the limitations or constraints that those bring then reverberate back upwards into the way in which you think about portfolio construction. It's not purely top-down. Yes, indeed, there's a strong top-down driver, but then it's adjusted by what you see actually available on the ground.
Exactly. And as you always say, investment is a conversation, and that is really the crux of the conversation between the portfolio construction team and the other part of the investment team, the research team. So we are able to identify a theme, and you know, it's actually quite useful to be thinking broadly speaking at the top level to then see how one can implement that. And that might lead us as a team to narrow our view or even expand our view, depending on what is out there that meets the bar of excellence that we maintain for the portfolio.
Don, super helpful. Thank you. So we're going to switch now on to the third question or third discussion, which is about the actual opportunity itself. You've talked big picture about what the energy transition is and why we think it's something that clients should have exposure to. You've then helped us think about how we should see that within the context of our portfolios. Where does it sit? If we've got 100 to deploy, you know, what portion of that is it? And how do we think about the way in which that reflects back on the remainder of the portfolio? So now let's look at the particular way in which we're implementing at the moment. So with that introduction on, can you talk a little bit about the journey we're on here?
Absolutely. So we first invested in a manager to give us exposure to the energy transition theme back in 2022, in early 2022. As I mentioned at the very top, you know, the theme energy transition is likely to be non-linear, and that led us to investing in a long-short exposure. The hypothesis there was that at different times you would want to be able to be long, what let's call it, the new side of the theme, and short the old side of the theme, and vice versa. And that at different points in the cycle, as well as different points in the sort of trajectory of the theme and the opportunity, there would be money to be made on both sides of the coin. Again, I mentioned earlier that perhaps now we're looking at phase two of energy transition, where the demand side for power has materially increased, and there's been a renewed focus on electrification in this world post maximizing for efficiency and really this new expanded demand. Our hypothesis, therefore, is that perhaps we want to now have long-only exposure to this theme, and that the opportunity set has broadened out with more sustained tailwinds for a period of time. And therefore, you know, as part of that conversation that we've been outlining, we as a team thought, okay, what's out there that is available to us that still meets that bar of excellence, and we could reallocate capital more aligned with a long-only approach in the portfolio. In practice, we've had a good relationship with the manager that we invested in 2022. And back then, we knew that they had both a long-only and a long-only strategy. You know, the research team, and you'll hear from Mario in the next episode, his monitoring of the manager has not just been through the eyes of an investor in the long-short fund, but really as a partner with their business and their firm. So the work that's being undertaken today by the investment team is to have a look at underwriting the long-only product that they have, and that we would transition the exposure that we have in the portfolio from the long-short into the long-only.
So, Donald, you've expressed it, I think, very elegantly there. I'm going to put it in a slightly different way. I think that when we were having this conversation, because as you say, investment and portfolio management is a conversation. It's a conversation between our clients and us, and it's a conversation within the firm about how best we fulfill their needs and the obligations that they've placed upon us. And the context in 2022, when we made this original commitment, was an observation that there was quite a lot of capital going into, broadly speaking, sort of green ESG strategies. This was, as you will recall, it was in the height of the Biden administration. We had the Inflation Reduction Act that was directing a lot of capital towards green, and particularly labelled as green energy projects and activities, and our anxiety to you put it as we didn't think it was going to be, we thought it was going to be non-linear, is a way of saying that, you know, it can go down as well as up. And in particular, we were concerned that the green space, although as a firm, you know, we absolutely believe that sustainability and decarbonizing is absolutely a long-term trend. Within long-term trends, you have cyclical ups and downs. And at that moment, we were a bit concerned that we were in one of those cyclical upturns, and that actually clients were going to be better served by us not giving them a linear solution. Is that fair, Donald?
Yes, absolutely. The capital that was raised and invested prior to 2022 perhaps lacked some discipline around many of those ESG factors that you would discuss. And we've seen that shake out now. And what we get with the long-only exposure from the same firm is still an approach and an investment strategy which is able to tilt the portfolio to some of the more cyclical exposure, some of the more defensive exposure when the theme is playing out in that non-linear fashion. But through time, we are just going to own more of the structural tailwind that we believe is out there. It's also perhaps a reflective view in terms of what we're trying to deliver more broadly from the equity allocation in our portfolios, and being mindful that having sort of more exposure to more parts of the market through more of the cycle will deliver those outcomes which we've been discussing with our clients.
And there's a bit of a feedback loop there, isn't there, Donald? Because obviously if you go from a long-short exposure to a long exposure, you are de facto getting more market risk, and therefore you have to, if you choose to do that, you then got to neutralize that in other areas of the portfolio.
Yes, to the extent that one wants to. And part of our view in terms of increasing the market risk in the portfolio is aligned with our conviction and ability to be able to monetize the theme. And we do believe now that the opportunity set is such that perhaps we have a higher probability of positive outcomes, and therefore increasing the risk in the theme, broadening it out to some extent, is the right thing to do.
And to what extent, Donald, maybe this is a question I'll put to Mario as well, to what extent was our change of view driven by feedback from the manager and from facts on the ground, and to what extent was it driven by a sort of broader strategy top-down view?
I'd say that perhaps that's more of an ask from the portfolio management team, from that top-down view, that the opportunity set has broadened out, and the greater understanding that comes with having seen the long-only product more up close as investors in the long-short, perhaps now we've identified that as taking a bit more of a focused view on what the differences between the long-short and the long-only provide you in terms of portfolio exposure, and actually from that total portfolio approach and thinking about broader competition for capital within the portfolio, perhaps having a slightly higher demand from a portfolio perspective for the underlying names that the long only provides.
Donald, thank you very much indeed for all of that. Very helpful, very clear, and a fantastic intro to the next episode, which will be, as I say, with my colleague Mario. I think we've talked a lot about this idea of conversation, and I guess with that, the sort of journey element of it, and I, as well as talking about the energy transition, I think it's illustrated as a firm how we think. So we started doing this, we've been thinking about it for a long time, we execute in 2022, but it doesn't just stop there. There's an ongoing conversation, and that's a conversation with the manager telling us what they're seeing on the ground. It's a conversation amongst ourselves about what we see happening in the world and the relative merits and demerits of different strategies and offers. It's also a conversation with our clients and the sorts of exposures that they want to have. And we take that and we evolve, and there is that journey. And I suppose this isn't the final step, Donald. We don't know what the next step will be, but this is just the latest and sort of best expression of where we think things are in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Donald, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye.
A link to Capgen's privacy notice and full terms can be found in this podcast summary description and on our website.